Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Warning, this episode contains scenes that may be disturbing to some of our listeners.
At the end of the previous episode, Consuelo Amaya, Captain Coral's sister-in-law, recalled how many in Colombia and around the world remember Pablo Escobar, but few keep the memory alive of the anonymous heroes who helped to end his reign of terror. This turbulent time, in the mid-90s, after Pablo Escobar fell and Captain Coral was killed, left a trail of pain in the Coral family. They were particularly difficult years in the context of more than 6 decades of armed conflict in Colombia, in which almost 270,000 people died. In addition to that figure of fatalities, it is estimated that more than 421,000 have been affected in one way or another. And in this context, the Coral family was like many others, fractured, scared, and grieving. One more family in mid-90s Colombia. At that time, Luz Mary Garrido, the widow of Captain Coral, remembers a drastic change in the attitude of her son Beto.
Ese niño alegre, porque él era un niño demasiado alegre, inquieto, bailaba, cantaba.
Such a happy kid. And you know, because he was so happy, he was restless, he danced, he sang, he acted in school. He was always asked to participate in the plays, where there was singing and acting. He was a very active child who liked to help.
Captain Coral's death was so unexpected and traumatic that it left everyone in shock. The days following the murder were difficult, even logistically. A family friend lent Luz Mary Garrido a car to drive from Ibagué to Bogotá, almost 5 hours away. They spent the night there in Bogotá, and in the morning of April 23, 1994, the family took a flight to Barranquilla, the city on the coast where Humberto Coral was born and raised. But Beto's attitude, behavior, and personality transformed after that burial in Barranquilla.
He stood next to his father's coffin and he walked in silence. He didn't cry. He didn't say a word. Nothing.
He appeared tough, but on the inside, he was a child who felt tired, confused, and sad.
And then my son arrived at the funeral home, and then the police arrived. 4 policemen lined up, 2 at the foot of the coffin, 2 at the top, with my son standing next to it, with a very dry look. In other words, with a hardness, without a gesture of pain, of sadness. He had no expression on his face. Then I called to him, and I said, "Papi, come here, are you tired?" I was amazed because this kid, I remember very well, said to me, "From now on, I'm not allowed to get tired. I can't get tired. And I won't get tired."
Let's imagine the scene at the funeral. there's an 8-year-old Beto, surrounded by uniformed police officers carrying his father's coffin, whom he had just seen a few weeks before. When they lowered the coffin into the grave, they also lowered the promise of finally living together as a family. And from that moment in Barranquilla, Beto has memories that are almost impossible to forget.
Llegamos a Barranquilla y todo era desorden.
We arrived in Barranquilla and everything was disorderly. Everything was horrible. Everyone was screaming. Everyone was crying.
Beto has a photo he shared with me. In it, he's small, in the background, with a stoic gaze. He's surrounded by police officers, with more people gathered around. Beto is helping to carry the large and heavy coffin wrapped in a huge Colombian flag. The funeral changed everything for him. In his mind, Beto thought of his father as a detail-oriented, dancing, smiling, and loving man. The image of the corpse in the coffin forever altered that image in Beto and Jennifer's mind.
Desafortunadamente, me dejaron ver a mi papá muerto en el ataúd.
Unfortunately, I was able to see my father dead in the coffin, and it's inevitable not to remember him without seeing him dead in the casket.
Y me parece súper terrible que un niño vea eso.
And it seems super terrible to me that a child sees that. I mean, I don't understand why they took us to see that. Like, look, there's your dad, dead and full of cotton.
The entire Coral family was devastated.
Lo tenaz también fue ver a mi abuelita sufrir porque yo creo que para uno de mamá debe ser tenaz.
It was also tough to see my grandmother suffer, because I think for a mother, it must be tough to bury a child. To see my grandmother like that, she still cries for him.
Pero que nunca en la vida yo he escuchado esos gritos.
But I've never heard that type of yelling in my life. The screams of my grandmother were difficult to describe.
And it's because Beto and Jennifer's grandmother, who was on a trip in New York, traveled back home after being told only a half-truth, that her son Humberto had not survived the surgery he was scheduled to have.
En ese momento le contaron que mi papá lo había matado.
There they told her that my father was killed, and how he was killed.
It was a funeral with a lot of people, in a cemetery in the outskirts of Barranquilla, outdoors under the sun. The casket that seemed shocking and ostentatious to Beto seemed to go hand in hand with the event. Jennifer described it as having a certain tone of grandeur.
Es super conmovedor, o sea, ver como que los homenajes que todo lo que le hacen es.
It's super moving. I mean, the tributes, everything they do is something. I mean, it's super nice because it's like a movie. You see those military wakes in the movies and you say, wow, how elegant, all the military. But really, it's something super ugly.
And at their young age, Jennifer and Beto had a hard time understanding what was happening.
El dolor de pronto en ese momento no es tan fuerte, porque uno no asimila la pérdida.
The pain at that moment is not so strong, metaphorically, because they keep telling you that he's in heaven and that he will always be with you. So as a child, we always take everything very literally. So I imagined that my dad was going to come see me every day.
And Beto waited for the day his dad would come back to see him. But that moment would never come. Although the memory of his dad helped him, as he told his mother that day, to never give up, to never get tired. This is Transportista, Who Murdered Captain Coral? Episode 4, I Can't Get Tired.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation,
I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating.
And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
After his father died and the family gathered at the funeral, Beto Coral made a promise to himself to step in as the man of the family. He was young, he was only 8 years old. His mother describes that commitment she saw in her young son. Here again, Luz Mary.
Desde ahí yo vi otra actitud en Beto.
Since then, I've seen another attitude in Beto. It was a strange attitude in a kid, a silence, like, here I am, the one who will take care of the family.
Beto was very compassionate and understanding with his mother, who lived through very challenging times. Beto and his sister shared a common goal, to ease their mother's pain.
One day I came home and I said, well, I'm going to fix them something to eat. So I went over to start cooking, and when I opened the fridge, I expected to see sausages. I had bought sausages for about 15 days to cook for them. And I also had gotten some ham and some cheese.
Luz Mary realized that all the food she had purchased for her children for the next few days was no longer in the refrigerator.
¿Qué pasó? Ustedes se comieron todas las salchichas, el jamón. Y se queda mirándome y...
And I said, what happened? Did you eat all the sausages and ham? And, you know, the kids, they just looked back at me with fear. Then they took out coins and bills from their little box. And my daughter said... It wasn't my fault. Beto told me we should make hot dogs and sandwiches and sell them in the neighborhood. These kids, they sold our food. They sold our food. But they did it to make a profit. And they made a profit. And they even replaced the sausages and the ham. They got more customers. They kept selling them.
When Captain Coral was murdered, the government of Colombia forgot about them, and the family had to resort to different measures to survive.
Nosotros nos quedamos sin nada.
We were left with nothing, without receiving any money, rent, food, school, all that. I started taking care of everything, and it wasn't too much for me because I've always worked.
Before his death, the family depended largely on Captain Coral's salary to get by. Luz Mary had always worked selling merchandise and clothes, but it was hard to take care of her two young children completely.
Entonces empiezo a cargar niños a colegio, a vender almuerzos a domicilio, mercados a domicilios.
So I started taking kids to school, selling lunches and groceries at home. I wanted to say, wow, I can take care of my kids. I can provide them what they need instead of going to my parents' house. So I had to make a lot of effort to maintain the same standard of living.
All this while the Corral family continued to deal with such a painful loss. But Beto didn't give up. He suffered seeing his mother working so hard and finding herself in such a difficult situation.
Fueron años muy duros, años fueron años horribles, fueron años donde mi mamá inclusive no tenía muchas veces para darnos de comer.
There were years when my mom didn't even have enough to feed us, and she would come home crying. She would say, "We have nothing, I have nothing to feed you." I learned to eat something called guarrús. Guarrús is the food that poor people eat in Colombia when they only have rice and water, no oil or salt. So they mix the rice with water, cook it, and the rice turns into a watery mess. And we ate that for many nights because we have no money.
These brutal shortcomings could have been less severe if the state had supported Luzmeri with a pension. However, in life, Captain Corral omitted something that could have solved many problems for them. Luzmeri Garrido and Humberto Corral never got married. And as we mentioned in the previous episode, Captain Corral was no saint. Luzmeri found out something at the funeral that broke her heart.
Pero mi papá le apareció otro hijo por otro lado y otra niña por otro lado.
But my dad had another boy from another woman and another daughter from another woman who I must say are wonderful. They're my siblings. I have nothing against them.
Beto remembers that his mother, in addition to feeling pain, felt anger.
La culpa es exclusiva de mi papá.
The blame is solely on my dad for exposing us like this. But my mom was not married to my dad. And the law in Colombia at that time was absurd and did not allow the presumption of union, that a de facto marital union can exist.
That is, if a couple has been together for at least 2 years, then the state can allow it to be considered a marriage. Therefore, she was left with nothing. But all the 4 children of Captain Corral had the right to receive a small amount. Economics were not the only hardship the family suffered.
La niña ya vivía como en otro mundo. La niña ya me tocó con psicólogo, fonoaudiólogo, terapia de lenguaje, porque la niña se bloqueó totalmente.
My daughter appeared. She'd already been to see psychologists, speech therapists, or language therapy because she was completely blocked. In the classroom, she wouldn't talk. She was very scattered. And once the psychologist asked Jennifer, "Tell me, what do you want?" And she answered, "I want to go see my dad, and then I'll come back."
While for many girls and boys, elementary school is a fun and joyful period, for Jennifer, it was the opposite.
En ese momento, cuando supieron en mi colegio que yo había quedado huérfana,
at that moment, when they found out at my school that I had become an orphan, I was the object of teasing and bullying. Like, I remember so much that your dad went to hell for killing Escobar. Like, your dad will pull your legs at night, and they made fun of me.
She had to endure the bullying from her classmates, and the mother of the family had to use what little money she had to pay for private school tuition.
Yo estudié en colegios privados.
I studied in private schools because I was not accepted in a public school. They did not accept me. They did not give me a spot.
Since Beto was the son of a police officer of that rank, a captain posthumously promoted to major, they assumed he would have the right to study in a public police school. But he was denied a spot.
Por ser huérfano, solamente hasta el grado octavo.
Because they were orphans, only until 8th grade, my mom managed to get a spot.
Luzmeri had multiple jobs at the same time. She fought daily to give her children the education they deserved. Her life was not easy. And on top of that, because she was a woman and a widow, there were men who took advantage of her. She managed to get a spot for him at the police school when Beto started the 8th grade, the last year of middle school in Colombia, when he was 14. However,
la manera como lo logró lo recuerdo hasta el día de hoy. El rector de esa época, mi mamá le rogaba y lo perseguía para que nos diera el cupo a sus dos hijos.
The way she got it, I remember it to this day. The principal at that time, she begged and pursued him to give us a spot for her 2 children. At that moment, he asked her out. And every time my mom went to his office, she had to endure the harassment from that man in order to get us a spot. My mom even suffered sexual harassment from police officers at that time. And it was very, very painful to see my mom have to humiliate herself that way. At that time, you saw it as normal, although my mom told us, "Yes, he's asking me out." From my mom, "What can we do? So I'm going to go out with him." And it was very sad. Now I understand it, today, and it angers me even more. Now, today. And that's how it was. Those were very tough years.
It's another case of sexual harassment in a country and a region where this type of violence is so common that it is seen as an epidemic that threatens women. But it was not, and is not, acceptable or tolerable. Those years put the whole family to the test, but Beto swore he wouldn't give up. Despite the difficulties, both Jennifer and Beto graduated from school. And as Beto grew up, he began to develop an increasingly strong interest in following his father's footsteps.
Yo siempre quise ser policía.
I always wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be like my dad.
Every time he tried, he made a mistake that set off alarms within the institution.
En cada entrevista, contaba los
pormenores. In every interview, I told the details of my father's murder.
Beto had grown up witnessing injustices, and he wanted to remedy them however he could. But every time he sat down for an interview at the police academy, his words made them uncomfortable.
Claramente, pues, a la hora de las entrevistas me decían, y bueno, este señor, miren, todos los antecedentes que tiene en la familia.
So clearly, during the interviews, they would say, "Well, this gentleman, look at all the family's background, and we seem talking too much about his dad." So I passed all the exams, but when it came to the final stage, the psychologist gave me a negative assessment, and they rejected me because they noticed in me a quite contentious personality.
That ended Beto's dream as a teenager, to honor his father's memory by following in his footsteps. And he was rejected from the same institution where his father stood out and was decorated. But Beto had a vocation that he was not going to give up. In 2008, he was accepted to study law at the Cooperative University of Colombia in Ibagué, a private university. To pay tuition, like he'd done his whole life, Beto worked. He prepared and sold pork tamales and drove a taxi. Studying law made him feel more confident among his classmates.
Cuando yo contaba mi historia y las razones por las cuales estudiaba derecho, la gente se quedaba un poco sorprendida.
When I told my story and the reasons why I was studying law, people were a little surprised by it. They were a little shocked by how he was killed.
And as he progressed in life and acquired greater knowledge in the field of law, he delved more and more into the facts and circumstances surrounding his father's murder. He also became very active on social media and started using it to dig into the past. It was during this period that one day, his mother received a strange phone call. She picked up the receiver and heard a voice.
Dígale a su hijo, no preguntaron aló, nada.
It said, "Tell your son." They didn't ask for anything, but it said, "Tell your son to stop digging, or I'll end up like his father."
Luz Mary was terrified. Immediately, she contacted Beto, and she found out something that Beto had been hiding from her. That he, on his own, had been investigating the events that led to his father's murder.
El pelado me empieza a contar a mí todo.
The kid starts telling me everything, and I'm amazed.
He had been doing it for years without telling his family. Luz Mary learned that Beto began his own investigation when he was an early teen.
Entonces le dije, por favor, cuéntame todo. Necesito saber todo. Entonces él me dice,
so I said to him, "Please tell me everything. I need to know everything." Then he says to me, "I sent two letters to the president." At the time, the president was Álvaro Uribe, and he sent him two letters. He was just a kid. I don't know, 13, 14 years old, maybe 15, but he was a kid. And he said, "I remember," he says to me, "in the year that I sent the letter to the president of the republic, Mom, I wasn't asking for food or housing. I wasn't asking for help with my homework or school. I was asking for my father's death, not to go unpunished."
Beto revealed the details of his investigation and his contact with President Álvaro Uribe only after his mom received that call. And they weren't just threatening him through his mom.
Recibo amenazas de muerte en el 2015 durante todo el transcurso del año.
I received death threats in 2015 throughout the entire year because I was insistent on my social media talking about the subject. I would write to many generals and policemen looking for them.
Beto conducted his investigation on his own, with his own means. He didn't have access to an official file that would reveal any truth or omission to him. He sought high-ranking police officers constantly, pressuring them to share with him and the world what they knew or hid about his father's murder. However, these threats sometimes confused him.
La llamada de esos policías a veces las tomaba como que buena onda.
I sometimes took the calls from these police officers as, like, friendly.
Until one day, it all made sense.
Pero hubo una llamada de un general de la policía que me alertó.
A call from a police general alerted me. At first it was funny because, hello, hi general, how are you? Good, good, Beto, all good? Beto, look, stop that, let it go, brother. They're going to kill you out there and you're going to leave your mom alone. It's in the past. Well, man, thank you very much. Well, take care of yourself. God bless you, general. I hung up after 2 minutes. This man who just told me that if I continued, they will kill me. I took it as a death threat.
Beto felt restless and scared, like at his father's funeral. He prefers not to reveal the identity of the police officer who gave him that chilling message over the phone. But it was clear, and it disturbed Beto to the point where he began to plan escape routes and strategies in secret.
Y un día le dije, mami, yo creo que me va a tocar irme porque me van a matar.
And one day I told mom, I think I'm going to have to leave because they're going to kill me. And yes, I'm afraid they might do something to you.
Because of his background and academic training, Beto knew his country and the extreme violence that was possible. Time passed. Beto had 2 children. He started a new chapter. He began to study law. It was then that he received a threat targeting one of his sons.
Tengo redes sociales donde tengo fotos de él.
I had my social networks with photos of him. I was sent photos of him threatening to kill him.
They had sent him a message by email threatening his son. Beto knew he had to leave the country, and fast.
Me tocó comprar el tiquete de urgencia.
I had to buy an urgent ticket on December 22nd because they were going to tell me they were going to kill me before the end of the year.
This terrifying message meant that he could no longer stay in Colombia. He had seen it happen too many times, and each time was worse than the last. This time, they were not only messing with him or his mom, but his son. Beto couldn't come up with another option, so he shared his plans to his mom.
Entonces, yo me rebelé. Yo le dije, yo, no, usted no se va.
I had a meltdown. I completely rejected that. I said to him, no, you're not leaving. He said, hug me, give me a hug and say goodbye. Don't let me leave without hugging my family. I didn't say goodbye. I saw how determined he was, but I thought to myself, if I don't say goodbye, he won't leave. I don't want to say goodbye. I don't want to see him go. So I went home and the phone started ringing at 7 a.m. I saw messages on WhatsApp saying, Mom, please answer me. Don't let me go without getting a hug from you. And I told him, no. No, Humberto, don't go. I'm not going to hug you. I'm not going to say goodbye. I don't want you to go.
Luz Mary had to experience yet another loss. She didn't want to be separated from her beloved son. It was as if Luz Mary was once again having a family member ripped away from her. And once again, it was because he was seeking justice in her country. Beto decided to leave before those threats were fulfilled. And he ended up like a ghost, like Captain Coral. With a broken heart for being unable to say goodbye to his mom with one last hug, especially on such a special day, Beto took a flight from Bogota to Houston on Christmas Day 2015. Until this day, Beto and his mom, Luz Mary, haven't hugged each other again. We'll be back after a break.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Amidst death threats against his mother, his son, and himself, Beto arrived in the United States on a tourist visa. He came alone, without his family, and without knowing how to speak English. Beto had never left Colombia before. He decided to try his luck in the United States because he was told he could get help there. He decided to settle where almost all Colombians do when they arrive.
Me voy para Miami, donde pues ese choque cultural no es, no pega mucho.
I'm going to Miami, where that cultural shock doesn't affect us much. And I arrived in Miami and started my asylum process, and I really didn't know how to do it.
Asylum is a resource for obtaining legal residence in another country if applicants believe they are being persecuted in their country of origin based on race, religion, membership in a social group, or a defined political opinion. Although this might seem suitable considering Beto's circumstances, he entered the country on a tourist visa and applied for asylum after the fact. When done this way, asylum seekers face a high risk of getting processed or deported due to what is called a false entry. Nevertheless, and despite the risk, Beto began this long process.
Pero luego me comentan que eso era mejor a través de un trámite independiente con un paralegal o con un abogado.
But then I was told that it was better to do it through an independent process with a paralegal or a lawyer who said that. So I did it that way.
Apart from fleeing to save his own life, Beto thought, perhaps naively, that the United States would also help him bring justice to his father's case.
Creía que Estados Unidos me iba a ayudar.
I believed that the United States was going to help me. to protect my mother's life. I believe that the United States, because my father gave his life in the war and worked with the DEA, was going to help me.
Because, let's not forget, Captain Corral, as part of the search block, collaborated with the DEA and FBI to end the reign of Pablo Escobar. Captain Corral had also received training in the US. Beto thought this would make it easier for him to obtain asylum, but more than 7 years have passed. Beto has not been able to obtain asylum in the United States. It has been more than 7 years without him hugging his mother, and he has been separated from his children. But as he told his mother that day when he was only 8 years old, he would never give up.
I traveled many times to Washington, took action before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights.
This commission is part of the Organization of American States, based in Washington, D.C. Beto filed complaints and began exhausting his resources to pursue his father's case and protect himself. But again, he was not making progress. The commission denied him the resources for precautionary measures and protection twice. In addition to seeking justice for his father's case, he also became involved in other causes of social leaders in Colombia and those injured in protests, not only with the commission, but also with the United Nations. And this was not his only priority. Remember that Beto arrived in the United States with no money. He only had one semester left to finish law school. But in the United States, it was impossible for him to have his studies recognized. He had to start a new life. Like millions of other migrants who come to the United States, he began to work wherever he could, again facing the economic necessity of doing whatever it takes to survive.
Bueno, llegué a hacer lo que hacen todos los colombianos que están en el exterior y que le meten ganas.
Well, I came to do what all Colombians do when they are abroad and put in the effort. I have been a valet parking attendant. I picked up garbage. I was a waiter. I did more. I worked in construction. I did one of the toughest jobs in the United States, in a bakery. Cooking bread is terrible because you go from extreme heat to extreme cold.
Over time, when Beto took the dough out of the freezer and went to the oven area, he told me that this caused his eye veins to burst, and he also burned the skin on his arms, so he decided to cover the scar with a tattoo.
Terrible. Se me quemaba el pan al principio.
It was terrible. The bread burned at first. Well, but there's a saying that goes, a baker who doesn't burn the bread is not a good baker.
And yes, Beto baked bread, parked cars in a valet parking lot, or drove for Uber. But even in exile, while waiting for news on his status as an asylum seeker in the United States, and knocking on the United Nations door or the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, he did not give up his quest for justice for his father's case. From afar, he fought to obtain more details that would completely change the course of his investigation, even if it meant facing the highest levels of power in his country.
And it was the first time, after almost 26 years, that I managed to obtain that file. But it was like that, it was by force.
A judicial file that had been hidden for decades, which would completely change the course of his investigation. And it would also change the direction of his life. That's on the next episode of Transportista. Who murdered Captain Corral?
Con mi folio, con mis cartas, con la foto de mi papá, recorriendo todas las oficinas judiciales.
With my case number, letters, and father's photo, visiting all the judicial offices so they would listen to me, give me the file, move it or draw attention. Look, do something to discover my father's killer. Everyone ignored me. I think the prosecutor's office didn't give it to me, and I think they withheld the file for many years so that I wouldn't do anything in the years when I could have done something.
Como que los muy cercanos
fueron muriendo.
The close ones were dying, and then 4 months later, they killed a lieutenant. It wasn't a captain, but they killed him in the same conditions that they killed Humbertico.
Transportista, Who Murdered Captain Corral? Is a production of Exile Content Studio and Detective, in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network, and is hosted by me, Álvaro Céspedes. Production by Diego Olivares Jiménez and Álvaro Céspedes, with the help of Sabine Jansen, Andrea Ceballos, Ana Isabel Octavio, and Veronica Hernandez. Written by Álvaro Céspedes. Edited by Carmen Graterol. Fact-checking by Desiree Yepes. Thanks to the voice actors who contributed in this episode. Beto Coral is Horacio Mancilla. Jennifer Coral is Andrea Ceballos. Luz Mary Garrido is Rose Reed. Teresa Cifuentes is Carmen Graterol. Executive producers are Carmen Graterol, Rose Reed, Isaac Lee, and Diego Enrique Osorno. Sound design by Pachi Quiñones and Gonzalo Messi. Original music by Sebastián León. Daniel Batista oversees audio at Exile Content Studio. Our executive producers at iHeart are Giselle Vances and Arlene Santana. Research by Meño Larios and Emma Friedland. Production supervision by Julio González. Created by Diego Enrique Osorno. For more podcasts, go to the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.